The one-woman show, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, is coming to Chicago. That means Allison Arngrim is here on the radio with us. Hi, Allison.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm so excited to talk to you. You couldn't possibly know this, but it was the first show I did in this time slot. You were on that show. So without you, my career wouldn't even exist. So thank you.
I'm so happy. You know, I have a friend who's does podcasts and radio shows, and she years ago told me I was the gateway celebrity.
Well, said, you see, it's contagious.
And she said, I'd had a lot of bands on, and then I had you on, and now I have celebrities all day long. You are the gateway, like the gateway drug. You are the gateway celebrity. People have you on their show, then suddenly they have everybody. So there you go.
But maybe
another career started. You're welcome.
But maybe. Not if I was in France, where they either love you or they're scared of you, I understand.
They are so obsessed in France with Little House, La Petite Maison dans la Prairie. And they do have a soft spot for Nellie Olson. I went there and they just went nuts. And I said, it's basically just in France. They don't think Nellie Olson's mean. They think she's French. and it's something about the French mentality. Like, okay, we get Nellie Olson. Yes, that is our girl. We like her. Yes, we would. So I go there all the time. I do a show in French, a whole thing. Nellie Olson, En Flamme, Les Années 80. Nellie Olson lights the 80s on fire. It's just really crazy. And I've been doing shows there. I did a movie there. The French are mad for the Prairie and for Nellie Olson, and I enjoyed it enormously. And it's great. And I talk about that in the show. Yeah, so I have this one-woman show, and it's... You know, most people write a book and then they do a one-woman show. I am so weird. I did a show and then met a literary agent and wound up writing the book after. That's me. Everything is backwards.
Well, or Nellie Olson. So how much are you or not? And this is a text we have. By the way, 312-981-7200 if you want to text or talk with on the phone. Nellie Olson, so to speak here. Allison Arngrim is here. How much are you like her?
How much am I like her? Mm-hmm. Oh, we all have a Nellie living inside us. It's like the circumstances have to be right to provoke us to let her out. And it was crazy because, I mean, if anything, I was the shy kid at school. I was the kid who got beat up by the Nellie Olsons. I was the bully fodder. Playing Nellie was kind of my revenge against all the people who beat me up and treated me like that. So I knew what it looked like because I'd been on the receiving end of it. So I knew. And it was so much fun to do. But, I would let it out. I would come home. And people asked my mother, like, what I was like when I got home. And she said, oh, no, she's perfectly nice. It's all out of her system. I would come home so relaxed. I'm going to go take a nap now. Yeah. And I would just let it all out. You know, they say you should embrace your dark side. So I was able to, like, let her out and just yell and scream and throw things at people. And it was just so freeing, just so freeing. And, you know, my husband says Nellie Olson does kind of exist early in the morning before I've had the first cup of coffee.
Well, you were voted, as I'm sure you know, the nastiest person on television ever, second most next to Joan Collins, who played Alexis Colby.
Yes.
I mean, really, after all these years, 50 years, could you imagine that you and I would be talking about Little House on the Prairie still?
If you had asked any of the actors in the show in the 70s, hey, do you think in 50 years people will still be watching it and talking about it constantly and having fan reunion events where 18,000 people show up, we'd have said, oh, you're out of your mind. You know, it's so great. Vanity Fair, number one, rhymes with witch. And it was I was just amazed. They had favorite doctor, favorite mom, favorite dad, and then they had best... Yes, and there I am with Joan Collins and all these terrible people. I'm like, wow. But, yeah, it's Michael knew. Michael Landon really knew. He knew what he was doing. And several times over the years, he told people, you know, they're going to be watching these shows long after I'm gone, long after we're all gone. And everyone he told that to thought he was crazy. And here we all are. And he was absolutely right. He knew. He knew that there was something about that show that really affected people emotionally, and they would just keep watching it. And by God, do you know it's streaming now? It's on Roku, it's on Amazon, it's in 140 countries. It's absolutely insane.
Did Michael Landon create the show?
Well, Kind of. I mean, it's sort of a baby, like if Laura Ingalls Wilder and Michael Landon had a baby, which is scary. yeah, Laura Ingalls Wilder wrote these epic books, which all came out during the height of the Great Depression, and people just latched on to them, her whole story of her life as a child. And they're novels. I mean, Laura Ingalls totally fudged the truth. Oh, she was terrible. She changed timelines, changed people's names. Nellie Olson was really a girl named Nellie Owens, but she didn't dare name her. And then when Michael found out about the books in the 70s, when Ed Friendly decided, you know, got the rights and was making the show, he said, that's it. I'm doing this. I'm playing Pa. I'm in. We're doing it. And he saw something there. He went, oh, yeah, this whole generation of women grew up reading these books, and then they'll watch Bonanza, and now they're going to watch that. Yeah, this is the thing I need to do. He was so smart, and he put his touch on it. There are obviously characters, episodes, plot lines that are totally from the mind of Michael Landon. And he saw something there and said, what if I just kept going with, like, other situations? Like, what would these characters, what would Laura's people, Laura and her family and these characters do in other situations? And he just took it and ran with it. And I think that magic chemistry, that magic formula really worked.
Here's a text. What was Michael Landon really, really is in all caps, so really like?
Everybody wants to know that. First of all, I have to say, he was probably the funniest person I have ever worked with before or since. He was hilarious. He had this, like, he loved to laugh. He loved to play practical jokes. He giggled like a girl. You knew Michael would arrive for work because you could hear him for miles across the location. You'd hear, you'd go, oh, good Lord, what is it? It's Michael. And you catch it in certain episodes. Every now and then when Charles starts laughing hysterically, if he really gets going, he goes all the way up and starts going, you're like, whoa, what is that coming out? This macho man here, this high. But he laughed like a girl. He loved jokes. That's why he loved hanging out with the kids. You know, he had nine children. This man had nine children. He loved working with the kids, and he loved joking around. We were in fits half the time on the show. It was all we could do to keep a straight face. He loved the blooper reels. I mean, he was out to lunch. But at the same time, we were cranking out this show. We were ahead of schedule and under budget. Okay, I had an actor friend come to the set. And, you know, they have the call sheet, and it says exactly what you're filming that day.
Sure.
And everybody knows you can really only film so much because there's multiple camera angles and retakes and the setups and the light. It's very complicated. So my friend looked and said, this says that you guys are going to film 12 pages of the script today. That is physically impossible. You cannot possibly film 12 pages in one day. You'll be in overtime. You'll be here all night. We were done by 5. I said, we filmed 14 pages yesterday. I don't know what the fuss is about. Michael worked very fast. He could be an absolute taskmaster. Oh, we had fun. But boy, oh boy, everyone down to the youngest child on that set knew you showed up, you suited up, you knew your lines, and you knew what you were doing. There was no fooling around on that end. But then, of course, you'd be doing a dramatic scene, and he'd be, like, cracking jokes in the middle of it, and you'd be, like, busting up 5 minutes later, so.
Well, today you go to, and you've done this, work on a television show, and you do a scene, and then you do it again, and again, and filming or taping of that show takes literally, you know, it's 21 minutes or something on air with, you know, without commercials,
right?
And it takes hours to do, you know. There was no fooling around, huh?
We did an hour-long show. We shot it on film. It's not digital back then. In fact, it was actually Panavision 35mm, and people who know what that is are going, whoa, dude. We shot it like we were making a movie. We were shooting on, like, movie stock, and we were shooting like making a feature film, and we did it usually start on Monday, and we were usually done by Friday. Might have to do an extra day Monday or Tuesday, but 5 to 7 days max to do an hour-long show that looked like we were shooting Gone with the Wind with multiple camera angles and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean,
bang that thing out.
It really is amazing. Now, you're coming to Chicago with a one-woman woman show that I want to talk about. What is the name of this one-woman show?
Yeah. Am I allowed to say the whole title on your show?
Well, I'm making you do it for a reason.
As long as I do it, you don't. That's one of the... It is called, indeed, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch.
No, let's do this again. Take two. We're live. That's okay. But we'll do it. Take two.
Yes.
Say it in French. It'll sound much better, I bet.
Oui, confession. Confession d'une gaffe de la prairie.
I don't know what she said, so I hope it was okay. And say if
Garce
you can't.
Garce is not that. That Garce is kind of the light version. It's almost like saying rhymes with witch. It's not so bad.
Okay. now say we'll be
Le petit gas, le petit gas.
La petite.
Pest. They call me the pest. They call me a pestilence in France. They keep saying she's the petite pest.
Tell me how to say we'll be right back on WGN.
Ah, oui. On revient à bientôt.
On un Riviera, Aviento, WGN. And I think it's safe to say, and okay to say, she is back right now. Allison Arngrim is here on WGN from Little House on the Prairie. She's coming to Chicago, and she will be in Chicago on June 12th at Chicago's Motor Row Theater, 2229 South Michigan Avenue, on the historic Motor Row, 2229 South Michigan.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Alias Club Lips.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they do wild shows there. That place is great. They've got a whole program there, a whole club called Lips that goes on there with drag shows and cabaret. That place is wild.
Well, perfect for you, I think. What will you be doing 100%. In this show? Yeah. What are you going to be doing?
Well, I talk about my life. It's great because I have the book, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, How I Survived. Nellie Olson, I Learned to Love Being Hated. And the show has many stories from the book. I talk about it's just, it's so crazy. Like you said, 50 freaking years later, and these people are afraid of me. People hate me. I had someone throw a McDonald's cup of orange soda at my face during a Christmas parade. Who does this? I talk about this kind of insanity of what it's like to be an ex-child star. And I talk about my crazy family. My mother was the voice of Casper the Friendly Ghost, and my father managed Liberace. Imagine growing up there. Oh, okay. Let's go to Liberace shows. And I'd turn on the cartoons in the morning. All of them were my mother. My mother was Underdog's girlfriend, Sweet Polly Purebred. She was Casper. She was Gumby. My mother was Gumby.
I have a couple questions based on that. So,
please.
Liberace, I met him once years ago.
Oh, yes.
He's such a nice man. Was
man, he was so brilliant. He was, and so successful. All his shows were sold out. I said, you know, he's kind of like the gay Elvis. I mean, he was so successful. Everything he did was a smash. I mean, he actually gave us the phrase, cried all the way to the bank, because you couldn't get a ticket. Every show he did was sold out. He was so successful. And the critics thought he was crazy. And the critics were this ridiculous, this man and these ridiculous outfits to do it. I mean, there'd be no Elton John without Liberace. And he would do these shows, and the critics would say, well, this is terrible. And he said, I read the review, and I cried all the way to the bank. because the man was printing money. And my parents take me to a show. My dad's like, oh, yeah, Liberace. And, yeah, working for him, it's the same stories you hear about, like, people work for Elvis, shirt off his back, buying people cars. I mean, he just loved people. And my dad said, now, don't say anything, because no one must know that Liberace's gay. I had to tell you this, guys. I'm 8. I know he's gay. Seriously, dude, look at this man. And it was amazing. It was hilarious. He had these women who followed him everywhere from show to show. It was really a phenomenon. It was a phenomenon. We lived around the corner from him at one point. I used to go trick-or-treating at Liberace's house on Halloween.
What did he give you when you went trick-or-treating at his house?
The butler come to the door. I am not kidding, like out of a movie, with a silver tray, and he had these little plastic orange and black pumpkins with these fabulous high-end orange and black jelly beans in them. Everybody wanted to go to Liberace.
I love these stories, and you're going to tell many more of them, I'm sure, including, and I don't want you to reveal this. I want people to come and see the show, but I've got to ask you, are you going to be talking about that Larry King appearance you made?
I will mention. See, now here's the great thing. I do the happy stories, but by golly, I have cards that say, ask Allison anything, and I do mean anything. And we hand those out when you must get a card. When you arrive, make sure they give you the big orange card that says, ask Allison anything. And so bring some pens and pencils with you, and you write your question down. So you can be anonymous, although people keep signing their names. I'm like, I gave you these cards so we don't have to point you out, and you totally say, I'm sitting over here, my name is Bill. But all right. So you get your card, and I get the questions. And if somebody brings it up in the questions, we will address it.
And in one sentence, because again, I don't want to give it away, describe why that appearance was so groundbreaking, I think, at the time.
It was really fantastic. I really owe a great debt to Larry King. So here I am with this marvelous group of people called the National Association to Protect Children, or protect.org. You can go online and look up protect.org. And they came to me and said, we're doing things to protect children from abuse, but we're looking at some of the laws. We're looking at legislation. Nobody was doing this. I said, that's brilliant. They said, we're looking at loopholes. They said, do you know there's a loophole in the law in several states, and in California is particularly that. I said, where if someone molests the child next door, they, of course, go to prison. But if it's their own child or any child they might be related to, they can get a total deferred sentence to not spend one night in jail. I said, are you crazy? They said, well, somebody was, because this is on the books. And I said, that's nuts. So we wrote up a bill. We met with a senator, a very nice man, Senator Batten, and we went in to change law. And do you know they didn't want to change it? These people were like, no, we like it this way. It's like, ew. So I wound up going on Larry King Live. And that Larry King, he ratted everybody out. We named the senators who put their names up on the screen, up on the website. He talked about go to the website, protect.org. We talked about everything. I talked about having been abused as a child right there on TV with Larry King. We talked about this terrible law. And those phones rang off the hook. And when we went back to that little building in Sacramento, oh, they sang a different tune. And the law was passed. And,
yeah.
And you're in Illinois. You're in Illinois.
Yes.
Props to Illinois, because when we first started changing this horrible, horrible law, they changed it in Arkansas, North Carolina, and Illinois. Illinois changed their bad law 2 years before California and New York. You guys were on it big.
Of course. Of course we were. I want you to
be very proud.
I want you to be very proud to see this lady, and this is without coffee. So imagine what she's like with coffee. June 12th at 7 o'clock p.m., Chicago's Motor Row Theater, 2229 South Michigan Avenue. Allison, it is such a pleasure. You're a great guest on the radio. That is an understatement, and I'm certain even better on stage. Thank you so much.
I have tales of Michael Landon and Hervé Villechaize. It's a hell of a show.
Well, and the fact that you have tales in the first place is interesting, too. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you. She is great. I love talking with her.